I am Dracula.
Oh, it's really good to see you. I don't know what happened to the driver and my luggage and... Well, and with all this, I thought I was in the wrong place.
I bid you welcome. Listen to them. Children of the night. What music they make.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And classic stuff right there. That's from the original Dracula, 1931, with Bela Lugosi. And it's that time of year. It's October. We're creeping up on Halloween, and it's a great time to talk about horror movies and classic monster movies. And I'm holding in my hand a book called The Monster Movies of Universal Studios. It's a terrific book written by film historian and author James L. Nyber. And we're going to talk about that and much more. And let's welcome James to the show. James, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing, Nick? Good to be on.
Thanks, man. Now, I understand that I can refer to you as Jimmy.
That's just fine.
Okay, great. Well, welcome to the show, Jimmy. And I want to tell you, I love your book. I just think it's great.
Oh, thanks. Thanks a lot. I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, I really. Now, let's start. But you've written a lot of books. You're a film historian. How did that all start for you? When did your interest in film begin? Was it at a very young age?
Yeah, it was. In fact, I can pretty much pinpoint it. The weekend after the John F. Kennedy assassination, which shows you that I'm old, my parents took, there's nothing on TV back then except coverage of the assassination. And so my parents took us to the movies, and I was just a little kid, like, you know, kindergarten kid.
Yeah.
And this was my first movie. And it was a movie called Who's Minding the Store?
Oh,
Lewis.
Yeah.
Jerry Lewis, yeah. You know? And you might remember at the beginning of the movie, he's like the first scene with Jerry Lewis. He's noisily slurping a bowl of soup.
Right.
And we're in this big, huge theater way up in the balcony. The place is packed because there's nothing on television.
Right.
And the people are just rocking in their seats with laughter. And my young mind realized that this goofy guy on screen was making all these people laugh at the same time during a very sad period that I was aware of. So I thought to myself, there's some sort of magic going on here. And so that made me fall in love with film and with comedy and everything else. Fast forward several decades later, I did a book on the Jerry Lewis films with Jerry Lewis's cooperation, and I sat in his living room and told him this story. So,
oh, man.
But that's what started it all.
Wow. Now, where did you grow up, Jimmy?
Racine, Wisconsin. Not far away.
Right. And I understand, from what I understand, you actually did watch all these old monster movies right here on WGN on Channel 9.
Yeah, Channel 9 premiered something called Creature Features around 1970.
Yep.
And they played that Henry Mancini experiment in terror music.
Yep.
And they would show all these Universal classics. Now, I was already aware of them, watching them randomly in the 60s, and also, you know, getting the plastic Aurora models with airplane glue that just about killed you.
Yeah.
And Famous Monsters magazine and all that. So I was into all that stuff when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And so by the time I was a teenager, when Creature Features premiered, I was aware of it, and I had seen a smattering of films, but WGN-TV was showing them, you know, right there, you know, with, you know, all the classics. I mean, the Lugosis and the Karloffs and the Lon Chaney Jr. and everything. Yeah. And that's where I saw them all, and it was just, you know, such of a wonderful, fascinating experience, and that's when I really became a fan.
Well, you know, that's exactly what happened to me. I'm a little younger than you are, Jimmy, but I grew up on those movies. Creature Features, I watched it every single Saturday night. I had the Aurora models. I had the Famous Monsters magazines. I was obsessed with that stuff when I was a kid. Still am. And, you know, and it was a wonderful time period to watch those movies and to see them and to be turned on to them. And as someone who is just, love these old movies, where I picked up your book. There is a horror convention that I am a host at called the Flashback Weekend horror convention here in Chicago, and it's and I've been a host and a Q&A moderator for since 2002, so for 15 years I've been doing it. And in, in their vendor room where they have, you know, stuff to purchase and all kinds of stuff, I saw your book at one of the vendors' tables, and I immediately picked it up and bought it, and I loved it. I just ripped through it. I just thought it was just great.
Oh, thanks a lot. There's been a lot written. You see, I never approached, this is like my 21st or 22nd book, and I never approached this genre as much as I loved it because I thought enough had been written. And then I explored a little more of the other books on the subject, and I noticed that none of them, they were too broad. They would include like all the horror movies, like Old Dark House, Black Cat, Raven, and all that stuff. And those are great movies, but I wanted to focus on the monsters and give them a lot more attention so the chapters would be a little bit longer. I wanted to find, along with the basic information you had to include, I wanted to find movie buff stuff, things that longtime fans might not have known, like the idea that Lon Chaney Jr. and Maria Auspenskaya were almost killed on the set of Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman when the stunt almost went wrong, and things like that. That just aren't real well known. And we worked hard on it, you know, me and some assistants, and we put something together. It turned out okay.
And, you know, as someone who is obsessed with this stuff and has read a ton of stuff on it, there was a lot of stuff in your book that I didn't know, Jimmy. And it was very enlightening and really informative and really well written. And it's a terrific book about something that's near and dear to my heart, and I can't wait to talk to you more about it. But we have to take a break for the news. And, Jimmy, if you wouldn't mind, before we jump into the Universal monster movies, I'd love to talk with you about Jerry Lewis because he was a true hero of mine, and I just you know I'm the biggest Jerry Lewis fan on the planet, and I'd love to talk to you a little bit more about that.
Oh, not a problem.
Okay.
Not a problem.
Hang on. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. There you go. That's James Nyberg, who has written the monster movies of Universal Studios. He also wrote a definitive book about Jerry Lewis's films as well, and with the approval of the great one himself, the king of comedy. So we'll talk about that a little bit more as well. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and we'll take a break. News is next.
Oh, I'm sick of the whole thing. I'm going to get out of here.
Whoever is bitten by a werewolf and lives becomes a werewolf himself.
Oh, quit handing me that. You're just wasting your time.
The wolf bit you, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
Wear this charm over your heart, always.
All right, I'll take it. What's it worth to you?
Do you dare to show me the wound?
What?
Do you dare to show me the wound? Go now, and heaven help you.
Yeah, there it is, classic from the Wolfman. Yeah, that's my favorite Universal monster is the Wolfman, and Svengoolie just showed that one a couple of weeks ago. The Wolfman, what a great movie! We are talking with the author of the monster movies of Universal Studios. It's James L. Nyberg. And 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We've got all of our Friday features coming up a little bit later on. And it's Nick DiGilio. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And let's welcome Jimmy back to the show. Jimmy, welcome back.
Hey, good to be back.
Okay. Before we jump into the monster movies, you wrote a book called The Jerry Lewis Films, An Analytical Filmography of the Innovative Comic. And for people who are regular listeners of this show, know that I pretty much worship the ground that Jerry Lewis walked upon, and and just was a champion of his work and an admirer of his filmmaking. And the guy was a genius. He was, you know, I think one of the greatest American directors that's ever lived. And a lot of people kind of disregard the amazing work that he did as a filmmaker just because he did a lot of silly stuff in his movies and on TV and stuff. But he was an amazing director.
Well, I absolutely agree. See, I co-wrote that book with Ted Okuda, who's from Chicago, and Ted and I decided, because usually the books I write about, Charlie Chaplin, Buster Keaton, even a book I did on the Elvis Presley movies, the guys just aren't around to interview that did the films. But in this case, there was. So after about a year of negotiation with his people, he agreed to meet with us on his boat in the San Diego Harbor after he had just done the most recent telethon. This would be 1992, just after Labor Day. And we get up on the boat and we start the interview. And he talked so much and gave us so much information that we continued the interview maybe a month later at his home. And we hung around his house. And in the middle of the interview, he said, "You guys hungry?" And we're like, "Well, yeah, we could eat, you know."
Yeah.
And he picks up the phone, calls Wendy's, and says, "This is Jerry Lewis. Drop what you're doing. We want hamburgers, french fries, and Cokes." And just hangs it up. No specific order. That was the whole thing. And like 7 minutes later, there was somebody at the door with enough hamburgers, french fries, and Cokes for about 30 people, and there were three of us. So it was like the whole, you know, the hamburgers were like the only wears a pair of socks once thing. It was
amazing.
Absolute abundance. And this was great. So I have a I ate fast food with Jerry Lewis story for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's really, really incredible. What was it like to talk with Jerry Lewis?
Well, our book was a very serious focus because, as you stated, Jerry Lewis wasn't just a bunch of funny faces and silly noises. He had a real vision as a filmmaker, as a director.
Yeah.
When you look at his shot composition, his use of sound, his use of color, where he decides to place the camera, these are all very – that's why, you know, when they say, "Oh, the French love Jerry Lewis," it's not the great unwashed of France. It's Jean-Luc Godard and François Truffaut and Cahiers du Cinéma magazine.
Yep.
It's like the French filmmakers who have a real – understanding of the cinematic process that appreciate Jerry Lewis's work. And so he was very pleased with the fact that we didn't want a bunch of trivia. We wanted to discuss the films at, you know, as cinema, basically. And he was pleased when we would bring up a movie like The Patsy and all the incredible ideas he had in something like that.
That's my favorite Jerry Lewis movie. That's my favorite.
Mine too.
It's my favorite.
Mine too. Kindred Spirits.
Yeah.
My favorite.
It's not only is it just beautifully made, but laugh for laugh. I mean, I think it's the funniest movie he's ever made.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah.
And the cast he assembled.
Oh.
My God. He told me a story that on the set every day, Peter Lorre would walk on and say, "Jerry, when do I do my song?" And it became a running gag with them. But when I said to Jerry Lewis, I said, you know, most people will say either Nutty Professor, The Bellboy, or both. And I said, I personally think The Patsy is every bit as good as either of those two movies. He looked at me and said, "I agree with you."
Oh, wow. That's amazing. So now the book, because I've not read the book. I really want to get it and I want to read it. But the book, does it cover just his movies? Does it cover the Tashlin films or anything?
Oh, absolutely. It covers the Dean Martin, the Tashlin,
the
Norman Turok. It's literally every movie he did up to that time. And remember, the book came out like 20-some years ago, so it doesn't have like the way later stuff. But the King of Comedy's in there.
Oh, good.
Know, all that. But it came out in like 94, 95. But it has Jerry Lewis's own opinion. We have the whole chapter on the film, and then at the end it's Jerry Lewis's opinion on the movie.
Oh, man, I have to get this book, Jimmy.
Yeah, so there's a paragraph on that. So,
oh, man.
We didn't always agree. You should have seen the look on his face when we said, "We really like the movie Sailor Beware." He did like this disgusted look and like turned away like, "Oh, God." You know, the perfect Jerry Lewis look. Like.
Right.
And we didn't think a whole lot, and I know it's a real favorite for some fans, we didn't think a whole lot of Cinderfella. And he was disappointed in that because he was very pleased with that collaboration with Frank. But, I really think the other stuff he did. And he didn't think much of It's Only Money, and I thought that one was hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought that was a particularly...
That's interesting.
Things like that did happen. But and we also have, like, appendices at the end of the book where Jerry Lewis gives his opinion on other comedians, like, some of these things, like, there's certain people he didn't like personally, and so he would say things about them being not good comedians, and he said that Groucho Marx took everything he heard at a cocktail party and turned it into material, because he didn't like Groucho, because Groucho, they kept asking, Groucho went to Cannes, and they kept asking about Jerry Lewis, and Groucho's ego couldn't handle it, so he said, "I haven't laughed at that guy since he was with Dean Martin." And Lewis didn't like that, so he did dislike Groucho the rest of his life. these guys all have egos.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was Jerry Lewis was not a person to, you know, curtail his opinions, that's for sure.
Absolutely
yeah.
not.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I really have to get that book. I really do. It just sounds fantastic. So the book came out before Funny Bones was released then?
Yeah, it was before Funny Bones, unfortunately. I did a commentary track on the new Blu-ray of Visit to a Small Planet, Funny Bones came out at about the same time. And so I did a review of it for my website, but that was not out. The latest he had done, which we didn't even get a chance to see because it was that new, was that Arizona Dream.
Oh, Arizona Dream.
Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
That's the very, very, very latest thing he had done at the time we did the book. So.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm definitely going to get that book. Okay, let's just jump into the monster movie, shall we?
All right.
Well, let's talk about now. The way you structured the book is you made them chronological. And you put the chapters are chronological, and you put it's only the monster movies, as you mentioned before, just the ones that. And which monsters did you concentrate on?
Well, I wanted to concentrate on all the main monsters during the classic period of Universal Studios. So it has Frankenstein, Dracula, the Wolfman, the Invisible Man,
the Mummy
from the Black Lagoon, but I include all of the sequels therein, even weird offshoots like The Invisible Woman, the comedy that Shemp is in. And
yeah.
I also included the Abbott Costello films because that really seems to be part of the franchise of each of them, especially Abbott Costello Meet Frankenstein, where Bela Lugosi comes back and plays Dracula for the second and last time in cinema.
Right.
I mean, that's just too important.
Yeah.
So we had to include all that.
I mean, that's a beloved movie, too. Whatever you think about, at that time, it was, kind of like they wanted to inject some life into the monster movies at that time. But that is a beloved movie. People adore that movie,
Yeah. Oh, it's a wonderful movie. And, Costello never liked it.
Is that right?
Yeah. When he got the script, he said, well, I'm not going to do this.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
And even after it became a hit, he never thought that he just dismissed that one and said, well, that was a turkey. I didn't like that one.
Right.
And his daughter said that if he had lived long enough to see it become such of a beloved classic, he probably would have warmed up to it.
Mm-hmm.
But in his day, in his time, because he only lived like 11 more years after the movie came out, he never liked that movie. So
that's interesting. What are some of your favorite things about certain movies? Some of the favorite things that you discovered about the movies. I mean, you talked about. You can tell a little bit more about how they almost died in that in the Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman.
Well, a stunt had almost gone wrong. You see, what I found was an old article in one of the trade magazines in which the reporters were on the set of the film Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman in order to. Take a look at, do some interviews and maybe do a story on the making of the film or something like that. Just, something for the trades.
Yeah.
And there was Lon Chaney was on the set petting a horse, and they came up to him and he goes, "This horse just saved my life." Apparently, there was like a carriage that he and Maria Auspenskaya were riding in. Kind of went haywire, and the horse like acted fast, and like it overturned and pinned him underneath. And if the horse had bolted, the accident would have had unthinkable consequences.
Wow!
And but instead, the horse stood still, and until Lon and Maria could be extracted, and that's despite the. Lon's Wolfman makeup, he was pretty much a thankful guy to the horse.
Right.
So,
wow.
That was just one of those crazy situations that happened on the set of the film.
Yeah.
They didn't have a lot of safety procedures 75 years ago.
Right. Right. All right, Jimmy, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Hang on. There you go. We're talking with Jimmy Nyberg. The latest book is called The Monster Movies of Universal Studios. It is Halloween time. We wanted to bring out this book and talk about it. It's a terrific, terrific book. If you're a fan of the movie Monsters of Universal, you should get this book. All right, we'll take a break, and we'll come back and talk more after this on 720 WGN.
Before you came, I was all alone. It is bad to be alone.
Alone. Bad. Friend. Good. Friend. Good.
Classic. Yeah. Boy, I love those movies. I love, love, love the classic old Universal Studios monster movies. And, I mean, I just, that's my childhood. That's what got me hooked into movies, what got me hooked into my favorite genre of movies, which is the horror movies. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are talking with Jimmy Niebuhr. His last name, by the way, is spelled N-E-I-B-A-U-R. And the latest book is called The Monster Movies of Universal Studios. And we welcome Jimmy back to the show. Jimmy, welcome back.
Hey, good to be back.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, you get into the history of all of these things and behind the scenes and stuff like that. What was Universal, you know, you talk about it in the book, but tell everybody about it. Why did Universal start making these monster movies and the people who were in charge decide to go down that route?
Well, there was, you know, it was originally, the studio was founded by Carl Lamelay, and his son had an idea. You see, they made a lot of money with Lon Chaney Sr., you know, in the silent movie
day. Right.
And he was doing some, you know, real classics. But the idea was for him to star in Dracula. And, of course, you know, unfortunately, he died in 1930. And so they decided to use the Bela Lugosi, who had been playing in the stage role. But Carl Lamelay Jr., when he became head of the studio, he was looking for some top-level horror movies to be produced because he was buoyed by the success of some of his more progressive ideas because it was his idea to do an all-color musical called King of Jazz, and it was his idea to do All Quiet on the Western Front, which became a Best Picture Oscar winner. Mm. So buoyed by this success, he decided that you know, filming like Bram Stoker's Dracula and other horror movies might, you know, work out artistically. So he, you know, he hires Carl Freund and he gets Lon Chaney set up, and it was going to be this great artistic production. But when Lugosi was hired, like director Todd Browning kind of, you know, was looking forward to working with Chaney again, and he didn't really particularly care for that. And there's a lot of things, you know, a lot of problems with it, but somehow it all hung together and it became a great movie.
And that's how it started. And they, from the success, the massive success of Dracula, that's when all the other sort of ideas for the monsters came into place, correct?
Yeah, you know, after filming, you know, the classic novel Dracula, they filmed the classic novel Frankenstein, and that became an even bigger hit. And so when they decided to say, you know, let's build on this, well, then they made The Mummy, which was not from any literary source material. That's, you know, from an actual screenplay.
Yeah.
And they got Carl Freund, the cinematographer, to be the director. So the cinematography is especially good on that particular movie.
Yeah.
And then they just started, you know, when they did a sequel that was even better than the first one, arguably,
yeah,
in the case of Bride of Frankenstein. You know, I know people might argue, but I actually believe that to be the better film.
I agree. Yeah.
And
agree.
And yeah, when something like that happens, well, it seemed like there was no stopping them. So it all, you know, it was this huge success. But then after a while, there was like some different things that they were doing that, you know, were costing the studio money. And Lamelay Jr. ended up ousted in a power play. And the new people that took over decided no more horror movies, and so they stopped making them. Well, then another guy came along and got in charge of the studio because this guy wasn't making any money with his ideas. And when this next guy got in charge of the studio, he threw out a couple of old horror movies in a double feature or a triple feature or something, and they started, you know, making all this money on these old movies that they had filmed, and they're like, okay, let's go. Let's start making horror movies again.
Yeah.
And the budgets were lower. They weren't these big productions like Lamelay Jr. had done where they had some artistic intent. They were a little bit more low budget, more streamlined, and more like superficially entertaining. But out of that came, I mean, you can't say much bad about The Wolfman, which is, I think, every bit as good as Dracula or Frankenstein.
Oh, yeah.
Even though it might not have been considered an artistic production at the time. Lon Chaney Jr. was a brilliant actor, and I think The Wolfman is one of the finest horror films ever made by anybody.
I agree with you 100%, Jimmy. It was just Fenghouli just showed it a couple of weeks ago, and I watched it again, and I've seen it a million times. I just love the mood of it. I think the acting is really wonderful. And it's surprising. Yeah. You know, when I was a younger kid and I really wasn't paying attention to the timeline, it's really amazing how far into the movie monsters how late in that period it was made, because it seems like a companion piece to the first couple of movies.
Yes, I think it was somehow it was mounted so well that it looks as good as those earlier films. And there's a lot of things in there that I probably noticed subconsciously, but when I'm actually like studying the films and having to write about them, the fact that the full moon is not introduced in The Wolfman. It's just when the moon rises. He doesn't look at a full moon in that whole movie.
Right.
And I probably realized that, but not like in my conscious mind. And I'm like, hey, yeah, you know what? That's right. It's one of those things. And when you're writing a book, you find stuff like that all the time.
You know,
even movies you've known your whole life.
Sure. Oh, that happens all the time. It was really funny when I was watching it on Svengoolie a couple of weeks ago. I had forgotten. I was thinking to myself, man, that telescope thing is really creepy. When he comes up and starts describing the earrings in her bedroom, I was like, that's a little creepy.
He's looking at Evelyn Anchors in from a telescope. Then he goes to the store and says, "Yeah, I know what kind of earrings. Yeah, he'd be locked up if that."
I know, it's so funny. Listen, I also want to mention, before we run out of time, Jimmy, it's a beautiful looking book. The cover is beautiful. You've got really great, nice stills in there and some really cool artwork. And where did you find some of this stuff?
Well, a lot of that is from collectors. When you've been doing books for a long time, you get to know people that are collectors and that, you know, nobody writes a book alone and that are helpful. But also in my research, I don't just look at other books and the, you know, easily accessible magazines. I really dig deeply and look at some of the trade publications and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that's where you'll find some really cool, like some of the trade ads, like, you know, coming to this theater, that type of thing. The Ballyhoo. It's fascinating. I mean, I didn't know that Werewolf of London was not allowed to be shown in Kansas City to people under 12 years old. And I forgot which film it was. I actually would have to look. But one of the films, they said there was a contest that a theater did that would pay a woman to come in at midnight alone and watch the movie.
Right.
And if she could sit through it without leaving, she'd get like money or something.
Right.
Things like that were fascinating to discover, and that's the type of stuff that I had fun finding.
Well, it's a wonderful book, Jimmy, and I really do love it. And I have to get a copy of your Jerry Lewis book.
If you want me to come back and talk about Jerry Lewis after you read that one, I'd love to.
Absolutely. Anytime I can talk about Jerry Lewis, it makes me happy. So that,
all right.
Jimmy, pleasure to talk to you, sir. And we're going to talk again, okay?
All right. Well, it was great to be on. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care.
It's an honor.
Okay. Take care. There you go. Jimmy L. Nyber. And the book is called The Movie Monsters of Universal Studios. A terrific, terrific book. And happy Halloween. All right. We'll take a break. We've got the news coming up next.